My talk's going to be relatively short, and since we are immunization people, I'm going to just give a little overview of the immunization objectives from 2010. And I just want to thank Rachel Kosover for preparing these slides, basically for me. So as you can see here, immunization and infectious disease has a second highest number of objectives in the top five focus areas. And you can also see that we have 55 sub-objectives, as Deborah had mentioned, as a way to get around having a limited number of objectives. And you can see 18 of these are coverage objectives, 13 are infectious disease objectives. And I just wanted to go over briefly the targets that we have used in the infectious disease and immunization objectives. One type of targets we use is reduction in the number of cases. These are for individual vaccine-preventable diseases. We have a 95% target for maintaining vaccination coverage levels for children in licensed daycare facilities and children in kindergarten, first grade. We have a 93% target for Hep B coverage for workers exposed to Hep B. 90% target, this is our most common one used, about maintaining coverage of universally recommended vaccines for 19 to 35-month-old children. Routine vaccination coverage levels for adolescents, Hep B in hemodialysis patients, pneumococcal and seasonal flu for non-institutionalized 65-plus and institutionalized adults in nursing homes. We have an 80% target for the vaccine series for children and adolescents. We have a 62% target for proportion of children who participate in immunization registries, but this one was actually already, we already hit that target because it was lowered in mid-course, so there was a little bit of a problem with that one. We have a 60% target, as noted here, for a number of objectives, Hep B vaccination coverage for MSM, pneumococcal and seasonal flu for younger 18 to 64-year-olds, and healthcare workers 18 to 64. We also have a 55% target for providers doing assessment of vaccination coverage in their practice within the last 2 years. And I'm not going to go through this slide in any detail. It's just showing out of our objectives, our sub-objectives, which ones we've met. And you can see there's a number of them baseline. That means that when they were actually put forward, they were met at baseline. I'm just going to go through a couple of these in the next couple of slides, highlighting some of these sub-objectives that were met. These are some of the disease, vaccine-preventable disease sub-objectives. The first is reducing or eliminating indigenous cases of vaccine-preventable diseases, and we've met a number of these for congenital rubella syndrome, diphtheria, polio. We haven't met them for some others listed. Another sub-objective is reducing hepatitis B. They've been met for some adults, high-risk groups, injection drug users. These are some more vaccine-preventable disease objectives. Have been met for invasive pneumococcal infections in children and older adults, not met for the penicillin-resistant infection in children and adults over 65. We have met the sub-objective for reducing hepatitis A and reducing meningococcal disease. Then we also have coverage sub-objectives, and these are listed here in the next couple slides. We have one for achieving and maintaining effective vaccination coverage levels for universally recommended vaccines among young children aged 19 to 35 months. And this is set at 90%. These are the individual antigens. We've met some of those. I think we actually just met the varicella one, the most recent NIS that came out for 90%. Number 23 is maintaining vaccination cover levels for children in licensed daycare facilities and children in kindergarten. These have been met for the vaccines listed here in daycare and kindergarten as noted. We also have a sub-objective for increasing the proportion of young children who receive all vaccines that have been recommended for the last 5 years, for at least 5 years, and this is a series. And this has been met for all the vaccines. This is an 80% coverage target. has not been met for adolescent vaccines. The next one is the routine coverage levels for adolescent vaccines, and this is a little bit not quite accurate because this adolescent coverage objective sub-objective was met using NHIS data, which has found that there were some problems. It's based on recall, one of the main problems. Anyway, so it really hasn't. When we actually looked at the NIS adolescent coverage, this hasn't been met for any of the antigens for adolescent. And we also have a sub-objective that was met for reducing vaccine-associated adverse events. And this is just to show, at the start of Healthy People 2010 launch, these were the vaccines that were that were included in the Healthy People 2010 goals and that were recommended at that time. And you can see, as far as ACIP in 2008, our most recent, we have a lot more vaccines that are recommended, so obviously we're going to have to address those needs. And this includes the HPV, rotavirus, Hep A, routine, meningococcal. And this just shows the same issue for adults. When Healthy People 2010 was launched, we had a number of vaccines that were recommended for adults. Now we have some more, zoster, HPV, pertussis, and these will also have to be addressed in the 2020. And that was all.
Thank you. So now we're going to have a little bit of a discussion period, and that is going to be led by Dr. Ann Haddix. Dr. Ann Haddix is a longtime respected economist at CDC. When she joined CDC in 1992, she was the first full-time economist on staff and is one of the founders of the discipline of prevention effectiveness at CDC. She serves a critical role in engaging HHS and CDC senior leadership on matters pertaining to improved communication, collaboration, and alignment with regards to goals, which includes not only healthy people national health objectives, but also CDC's health protection goals, the HHS strategic plan, and the HHS secretary's priorities. For Healthy People 2020, Dr. Haddix and her team within CDC's Office of Strategy and Innovation leads and advises many of the CDC units involved in Healthy People 2010 and 2020. She's a trusted advisor to her HHS Office of Disease Prevention and Health Promotion colleagues who coordinate Healthy People as well as the CDC director.
Can I do this from
sure
from here? Can you? Is great. I can tell the mic is on. Well, I decided to stay sitting down because this is the part of this program when you're the participants. So we are in the midst of public comment period on Healthy People, and this is really the time to shape how Healthy People looks going forward. And we're only going to shape it if we get good public input based on years of experience in working with healthy people and using healthy people to form collaborations, to set targets, to set shared goals, to identify new ways of working together, to establish budget responsibility, personnel responsibility, many, many ways that we can use healthy people. So what I wanted to do today in my role of discussant is to field the questions and comments from you all on how we can, what's really worked well about with healthy people for immunizations? What do we keep and how do we improve it? A number of things have been proposed, everything from, one comment this morning in the public comment period was, how is healthy people going to move us to a single-payer healthcare system? I thought that was rather interesting. I guess, well, we could make it an objective, and then maybe we'll be there in 10 years. To everything about, how should healthy people, how should the focus areas be organized? Should they be organized around determinants of health or disease areas? So I think that everything is up in the air right now, and I think for me the exciting thing about working on healthy people has been that the folks in the department at ODPHP and the folks on the Federal Advisory Committee that are advising the secretary are really very, very open-minded. The chair of that advisory committee is someone that many folks in public health know, Jonathan Fielding, who's the leads the health department in Los Angeles and also is chair of the Community Preventive Services Task Force, as well as has chaired and been member of many, many other things, many IOM committees, et cetera. And I think that in discussions with him, he walked in with one perception of how he wanted to change healthy people. And then after incredible discussions with his new committee and with many other people, is really rethinking that. I mean, how can we make the most out of this opportunity in this new electronic age, in a new era of public health, in an era of healthcare reform? So I'm not going to say any more than that, because I want you all to ask questions, give your input, your experience. What should we keep? How should we change it? Do we need more objectives, less objectives, new focus areas? How do we use it to collaborate better? How do we use it to get public health action? How do we use it to measure progress, to align budgets, whatever? So I'm going to open it up, and I'll direct the questions accordingly, or to answer them. Now, come on. I know that immunizations people are never soft-spoken and quiet. Abby will get them in going. Yeah. And you may need to go to the microphone. It's after lunch, so it's really good to move around.
Thanks, Sandy.
It'll keep you awake.
Hi. My name is Sam Crosby. I'm a CDC public health advisor assigned to West Virginia Immunization Program. First of all, I've always enjoyed the public engagement process of developing the objectives. I took part in ones for 1990, 2010. I think I'll be retired by the time we finish 2020. But the question I mainly have, though, is one of the issues that we faced in West Virginia, we actually had a person on staff who was coordinating the efforts for 2010, but something happened to the funding, and that person disappeared. And so once that person disappeared, some of the priorities within the Bureau tend to take a back seat to the discussion. So as we're planning now, begin to go into 2020, will there be funding for the state level, local level, in the planning processes?
Do you want to answer that one, Deb?
I wish I could.
That's a very good question, and I don't know how that's going to go. We don't control the funding at the state level, and that's the problem. I think the more the plans, I'd say it has to do with the accountability the state has for reaching its public health goals. If it's using healthy people objectives and targets, isn't somebody going to get upset if those goals aren't reached or those targets aren't reached? It seems to me that's going to be what drives the funding.
Yeah, I guess the real challenge sometimes is that many times you don't often hear about things until it happens. Like sometimes some of the biggest complaints in small rural states is, my gosh, when they plan these excellent meetings to talk about the goals, they never come out to small rural states. Clearly there are other issues, I'm sure, bigger than small rural states like West Virginia and other states. But I think the point of it is, though, just as good to hear about the planning process and the public engagement process. But as I know the piece that interests me the most was, of course, the immunization part. And I know when we planned for 2010, we had a lot of folks at the table. But I guess the piece that got lost some kind of way when the funding, I don't know what level the funding stopped, but the word came down, don't worry about mid-course review because the funding is no longer here. Hopefully that was just a rumor, but the person disappeared. So now as we plan for 2010, I'll probably be retired by then. At the same time, too, I think the process itself is good.
Thank you. There are a couple of issues you're mentioning before you sit down. I agree with you about the rural health issues. They're serious. But I'm not sure what we can do beyond getting out to the regions. I think we've been pretty aggressive about getting across the country on this. Would you suggest that we go to rural areas? Because how many people can we reach in one rural area? That's what I'm worried about.
Planes fly everywhere. I mean, clearly it's a logistic issue, and it's more, you save more money and you go to larger places. But I think there are a lot of things that happens in rural areas I think would be real helpful for this entire process of engagement, both on the state and local level and
okay.
federal level.
Do you think the internet access will help the public commentators?
Yeah, I think that's good too, but it's nothing like face-to-face, like right now, okay. Seeing you and talking to you. There's nothing like that.
Point taken. Thank you.
You know, healthy people is only as useful as the people who actually use it at the state and local level feel ownership of it and feel that it's an integral part of the way that they plan their public health system. And unless we make it into a form that really works, in which they can use it, which you all can use it to set priorities and otherwise, when funding crunches come, it will disappear. I mean, speaking for a large federal agency that has a primary role in healthy people, we've seen the same pressures happen there. But having a shared set of health objectives pulls us all together in public health and in health, and allows us to keep health at the top of the agenda for the nation. So what we really need to hear from in the public comment period is, how do we make healthy people a useful tool for states, for local communities, and for organizations? And that's one of the really big struggles, is having 400 to 1,000, depending on how you count them, targets, objectives and targets enough? Well, what more needs to be added on? So it's truly something that you can use to set priorities, you can tie it to, and by basically eliminating it in your health department, it would be eliminating your programs. So that's just one of the challenges for us.
Can I say some more?
Well, let's allow some more questions.
Oh, all right.
So otherwise you and I'll be talking, and I'm gonna shut up too. Question.
Hi, Bob Swanson from Michigan. Sort of switching gears a little bit, I know we had one indicator in for registries, and I think it was a great indicator to start for the onset of registries at the beginning, where you measured two doses of vaccine for any 0 to 6, I believe, any two doses. I think we've gotten to a point where maybe look at measurements beyond there, maybe completion rates for 19 to 36 or 24-month-old, something like that. And even now, I think we should be looking at completion rates for adolescents, maybe within registries.
That's all good points. That brings up a whole other question on whether you want the objectives to be kind of more aspirational or practical. And I mean, I'm just interested to hear what's more useful to people in the states regarding high, lofty goals or objectives or ones that you can actually reach.
I'd like to answer your question partially, too. I'm Marlene Lugg from Kaiser Permanente, Southern California, and chair of the Los Angeles Immunization Coalition. Maybe you're not all aware that HEDIS does exactly that. The HEDIS rates that are calculated when they include immunizations in their HEDIS criteria are 2-year-old and 13-year-old, and their completion rates. Have they completed their MMR? Have they completed this? And then an overall completion rate. So it probably wouldn't be that difficult to include it, because it's being done anyway, certainly in the years in which HEDIS is being done.
Can I respond to that?
I think just to comment on how it could be used, I think that if there's a goal that's set out there, you continue to get funding to try to reach those goals, and I think it helps to secure the funding that, or at least in our state, the state funding that's there, if there's a goal that you're trying to reach.
Can I respond?
Yeah. I'm thinking about what Ms. Lund was saying about the HEDIS rates. You know, that's another point I didn't raise today, but it is something to be thinking about. How can this program interact with other sets of key national indicators? There are more of them out there than there were 10 years ago. We've got to think about ways to keep everybody on the same track. So that's something else to be making comments on when you go to the website.
Questions?
What about other comments just on how states have found Healthy People 2010 useful in getting more funding anyways?
Hi, I'm Amy Groom. I'm a CDC assignee to the Indian Health Service, so I can't really speak to a state-level perspective. But to your question about lofty goals versus really practical, IHS as an agency has to develop GIPRA goals, and we look to Healthy People 2010. And if they're really, really lofty, and we put those as a GIPRA goal, even though we know we won't reach it, then we get dinged. And so I think that when states and federal agencies are looking to Healthy People 2010, it's helpful to have something that's actually attainable, because if you get measured on progress and you don't meet that goal, people see that as a failure, as opposed to success that you might have made. So that's just one comment. And then I had one question, Abby. I noticed they had a pneumococcal resistant in face of pneumococcal disease. And since there isn't a vaccine specifically for that, I'm just kind of wondering about the rationale of including that as part of an immunization indicator.
Yeah, there are probably people that can better answer that. But I guess the vaccine can decrease incidence of that. So that was the purpose, even though there's not a vaccine specifically for invasive.
If I could make a comment about GIPRA goals, this is something I'm hearing over and over again, that the vaccine goals especially are very useful for measuring agency progress. The problem is, it's a double-edged sword. What you're mentioning about not being able to reach the goals, these are national goals, not federal goals. I
not state.
Yeah, or not state even. The idea is that all sectors are supposed to be working together to reach these targets. So it's difficult. It's difficult to hold one agency responsible for something that is really the work of many, many organizations together. And that's something to think about when you pick these goals, when you pick these targets as goals for your own individual offices.
Other questions? I mean, that is one of the, I'm really glad that was raised, because that is one of the thorny issues, is taking responsibility for and holding accountable one organization for a shared set of goals, and then what that does for target setting that may not be necessarily as ambitious as one would like them to be. I think the other side of that is setting targets about where we want to be, even though we're not, we know we could achieve it if we've gotten the funding, to try and drive that area. And I think one of those areas is adult immunizations. I mean, setting lofty goals for adult immunizations really brings attention to our current adult immunization rates, and perhaps can focus more attention on them and bring funding to bear on that, and hopefully raise those. So in sometimes setting lofty goals can actually focus attention on those and stimulate programs. You guys are a quiet bunch.
Are there mostly local people in here, or state program managers also? Yeah. Local. Because I guess I think they're just different perspectives also from local and state, because state have maybe more pressure to meet objectives.
You know, one of the things that we heard this morning from local folks was that oftentimes that healthy people really is more suited for national or state level objectives, and it's hard, and we may not have made the best link or provided the best tools to take national objectives and develop local level programs from them and use them for local level planning. I mean, is that an experience that you all have had? I mean, immunizations is a bit different in that that it is really a much more programmatic than some of the other areas, and has been, because of that, been very successful, and there's been a lot of focus, and the funding streams are very different. But we have heard that from other folks, is that the ability to use it at the local level isn't as well developed. Is that an experience you all have, or is that you're really just not using healthy people that much at all? I mean, how many people use healthy people in their planning? Okay, that helps.
What are the challenges? Why is it so hard to use it? Maybe 10% of the audience, maybe 5%? What is so hard about using it?
Why'd you come today? I mean, and I'm not saying that. I mean, because you came because you must have been interested in it, or thinking about using it, or wondering where it's going to go. What do you hope for it?
At least from my perspective, the experience I've had in West Virginia, we often take the national goals, and also as we provide funding to county health departments that we give them CDC and contracts, we make sure that they tie some of the objectives they're working on within to the state and national goals as it relates to Healthy People 2010. It has helped a whole lot in focus on things that need to be done, bringing together partners, sometimes partners. Even we just passed a bill in West Virginia now, it took us about 10 years to allow pharmacists to provide vaccines to mainly the adults, which is a real challenge for us. And many of the adults, you know, there's a big issue about medical home and the importance of the medical home, which is well taken, but the real challenge sometimes is how do you get vaccine to arms of people? And they finally able to work out a compromise, the bill was, because originally the concern was that the bill had not only adult flu and pneumonia, it also had shingles vaccine in there, and there was a lot of concern from the private community that they want pharmacists who are administering shingles vaccine. But they worked that out. But the part that I think that's real helpful for the target piece, that it tends to become part of your planning process to incorporate those objectives. That helps both the county and the city, uh, the, reach the goals on that we all are planned for. And of course, a lot of times you don't sort of get dinged for it, but you know, you're well aware now with accountability and performance that you got to do your job. But the other part that's real critical though is targets that are realistic. And I always think that now as we move forward away, not as much on kids, but also adolescents and adults as being real critical. I heard a comment this morning from a guy from ACOG, and he made the comment about the mortality in adults that you don't see as much focus. I heard that same comment about 20 years ago, that kids have the political behind them, but the adults don't, and the need to set up systems to also immunize adults is real critical. And as I watch the direction that we're headed with more focus on the adult parts, flu and pneumonia, I think we are going in the right direction as we set those systems up to make sure that adults also get their shots. Many times people forget about adults like ourselves. I love to ask people, when was the last time you had your flu shot? But no, I think we're going the right direction with that. Oh, sorry, honey.
Well, that's a new direction there.
Let's see what you... Oh, I didn't know if you were going to respond at all.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, and the point, I think, I was in public before and then went into private and then back into public now. And there's always been that disconnect between public and private. And when you talk about healthy people 2010, 2020, the data is more easily identified through the public sector. A lot of the immunizations, my immunizations, may not be in a registry because that information is in my insurance plan, or at least the plan that I'm in at that given moment in time. And so I think the idea of looking at using the HEDIS in addition to the Healthy People 2000 and getting more of that communication between all of the different stakeholders is where we'll make a difference in identifying what our true immunization rates are. To me, I see it pocketed and siloed. And so I think the more, you know, and the more activity on a national level trying to bring that together. I know last year I attended the Congress as a start with immunization, and it was a neat point of starting to have conversation with insurance plans, with the manufacturers, and with the community partners and the local health departments.
That's a good point. We're actually starting to look more at kind of privately insured individuals and rates in that way.
I work for a local health department, and for the last few years, in addition to you going out to private sector pediatricians, I've also started going out to adult practitioners. And I get a lot of phone calls from adults who want to get, in particular, shingles vaccine and haven't got a clue about how to go about getting it. They talk to their private physician, and their private physician tells them that he doesn't give it, please call the health department. A lot of the goals for adult immunizations are not going to be met, in my opinion, until we find some way to tie financing into it and get the insurance companies on board and make them see that it's easier and more cost effective to pay for a $250 vaccine than it is to treat an outbreak of zoster. That's just one incidence in how you have to go about changing the mindset of both the practitioners, the insurers, and the public. People don't understand that they need to get vaccines. I'm talking now in particular about adults. I think we need a very big public education campaign that's going to involve partnerships with health industry personnel and different businesses that all have stake in health care. I think we also need to do a lot of public education about the dangers of obesity. It isn't enough to tell everybody that if you are 20 pounds overweight, you need to lose weight. We have to tell them how, because their doctors are not telling them how. Their doctors are handing them a sheet of paper and saying, here, do this. I don't know the answers, but I do know that part of the 2010-2020 goals should be a massive education program as well as some kind of financial partnership between the public and the private sector. Thank you.
One of the things we've heard in the public comment period is that we need to link not the
healthy people process to technical assistance and actions and strategies for helping accomplish those, and that is one of the things we're looking at.
I'm thinking about opportunities within Healthy People 2010. When you talk about paying for this, you're also hitting a healthcare workforce issue. There's some larger things at stake here. For instance, why is it so hard for primary physicians to even think about giving these vaccinations? Why don't we have enough primary care physicians? What's going on with the way that we are financing those processes so that those people can stay in practice and reach some of the underserved areas that I'm hearing mentioned here? Think again about partnerships. That tells me Focus Area 14, Immunization and Infectious Diseases, has a lot to do with Focus Area 1, Access to Quality Healthcare. And there may be an opportunity for you to build some bridges with that group.
And I wanted to ask whether there is any word yet or even knowledge of what sort of public funding, CDC funding, will be available, especially in the realm of adult vaccinations and high-risk populations, such as like 317 funds, et cetera.
I don't know if this is really a place to really get into that. I mean, I think it was mentioned this morning, there is some money that's going to be going to the states to develop adult immunization action plans as kind of pilots and maybe best practices to share. And there is going to be some more money going out through 317 for adult immunization, and I think states are going to be hearing more about that, the specifics.
I'm Jan Hicks Thompson. I'm from Washington State, and I just wanted to comment about the question that was raised earlier about how Healthy People 2010 had been integrated into performance measures at the state level. Our state immunization program and our Department of Health has actually utilized the Healthy People 2010 measures as part of our performance measurement with our governor. Both for our registry as well as for immunization rates at kindergarten and overall immunization rates. I think one of our challenges is in our state we just moved forward with some performance measurements for public health in general, local public health, and I think the challenge is how do we integrate all these different performance measures. They're not the same as 2010. They're not as same as some of the other, the same as some of the other measurements that we have. So just something to keep an eye on. And one of the reasons that I'm here today is because I wanted to know where do we go next. If our 2010 benchmark is 95% for kindergarten entry, is 2020 going to be 100%? You know, what do we have to look forward to as far as changes in those measures for what we're trying to do, where we're at now, and when you get, you know, sort of what the marginal gain is pretty small between 95% and 100%. So that's what I was kind of hoping to get from today.
Thank you. And the target, the objective and target setting will be done in 2009. And the question of what do you do when you've reached your targets and you're up to that point, what do you do? And I think that we don't have answers, but the questions need to be raised. And sometimes, I mean, the biggest danger is that we don't set, that we say we've met it, okay, we're done, and then we slip. So how do we make sure that when we're at a place that's okay, that we can continue to stay there? So that's a very, very interesting question in many people's minds, and we'll be exploring it. You'll have to come back next year.
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of questions about funding and future. How many people here are from local interest groups or from interest groups, period? They're not state or local workers. Okay, it's just, all right, I see a few. It's not a lot, and maybe that's part of the issue as well, because I'm a federal employee. I can't tell you how to advocate with Congress or whatnot. I can educate you about what the issues are, what the policy inferences are from this data that we're developing, but it's very important for you to have links with local interest groups that represent the issues that are happening at the community level, and that you keep those partners educated, because they're the ones who are going to be speaking out for you or speaking out on these issues with legislatures, because we don't control the funding. We serve at the pleasure of the president. We're part of the executive branch, and some of these are legislative branch issues.
One last question.
Joanna Briggs, I'm from Wyoming. everyone talks about funding, but we're also straddled with situations where we can't get the vaccine. There has been, right now we're in a HIB recall. The kids that are getting assessed right now are kids that had shortages with Prevnar, varicella. We have all those issues that impact our reaching 2010. And are there any compensation, any consideration given to some of us failing these goals because of availability?
It's a good question, and it I think that the whole area of infrastructure that needs to be in place, do we need objectives around infrastructure as well as targets for rates?
And also as we go into, we change distributors, we change this, we've changed so many things, and we go from famine to feast. And as you do that, people quit coming. I can't get shots, and now I'm not 18 months, I'm 28 months. And now we'll just take care of it at kindergarten. They go to the bushes and hide, and we haven't been able to get them back out of the bushes.
Did you want to go first? Wish we saw some of it, or should we tie it up?
Rachel, do you have
time?
Okay. Can I say one thing? I'm on fire.
Okay. That's on fire. Got to go.
Yeah. Ms. Brazier, you're bringing up another issue. If you look at the issue of preparedness that's becoming such a priority for Healthy People 2020, one of the major challenges for that has been creating a vaccine stockpile as we prepare for pandemic flu. Sometimes preparedness is the best form of prevention because as we learn to prepare for these disasters, we're also learning how to prepare for the issues that you're struggling with. Those stockpile issues go local, and it's not just about pandemic flu, it's about these other vaccines that you're talking about. That's why I know I keep beating on that drum about partnerships, but it's very, very important to look at the opportunities you have to grow your own strategies by linking with these other issues.
Adele Solomon, Southern Nevada Health District. I just think we can, if we use like the mandates, like the OSHA bloodborne pathogens and some other ones, we can use that as a tool to get us going. Also, I think if we use a lot of community and social-based marketing, that for very little money, we can teach these people that, jeepers, it just went out of my head, the four things for that. You know, promoting them, getting their self-esteem up, having them want to think better of themselves. But if we can do that with not only like the employers, but also the employees and the adults, the working adults, then they become more conscientious of the vaccines and they want to go for it more, not just the hepatitis B, but the flus and stuff like that, that they can say, oh, we've created a safe environment for our employees. We can do that with unions and a lot of other different venues. That was it.
Thank you.
Well, I think we're out of time. So thanks a lot, everybody. And thank you, speakers.